Hello there, this is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for November 2022 for members and friends of the club. I am Andrew, a VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details of times and frequencies of when to hear these broadcasts are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you miss the original broadcast or want to listen to it again, from the club's website. That website once again is www.raotc.org.au. Club News. The September Melbourne Luncheon was held on the 22nd of September at the Caulfield RSL. The new venue was not quite up to the standards enjoyed by members of the now defunct Bentley Club, but nonetheless was quite acceptable. 40 club members and guests attended and enjoyed the lunch, followed by an interesting talk by Don Bainbridge, VK3BIG, about Associated Radio, the precursor to early ABC radio station 3AR in Melbourne. The October RAOTC Perth lunch was held at the Woodbridge Hotel and was well attended. After the lunch, an overwhelming majority of those present indicated they were pleased with the new venue and the meal and voted to return to the Woodbridge for November and December luncheons. Bookings have been made. See the ROTC website for further details and also how to get there. New members. Today, I am pleased to welcome the following new members to the ROTC. Brad Peters, a VK6, a Bravo Alpha Papa, has become new ROTC full member number 1843 on the 3rd of October 2022. Brenton Meadows, VK3, Charlie Mike, has become new ROTC full member number 1844 on the 4th of October. Brian Fredrickson, VK1 Bravo Foxtrot, has become new ROTC full member number 1845 on the 6th of October. Silent Keys. It is with deep regret we record the passing of the following members. Phil Zeeb, VK6 Papa Zulu, ROTC member number 752. Max Shooter, a VK6 ZER, ROTC member number 1431. Rodney Champness, VK3UG, ROTC member number 1086. Let us pause a moment in honour of our departed colleagues. Members are reminded the very latest club news is available via the ROTC website. Put ROTC into your favourite search engine to find it. The new banking details for payment of monies to the ROTC seem to be working very smoothly. Once again, those banking details are on the ROTC website. And that's about all the club news we have for you this month.
You're listening to VK3OTN and Associated Relay Stations.
This month we have three very interesting articles for you. The first is by Clive, VK6CSW, who tells us about the man behind the Butterworth filter. This is followed by Bill, VK3BR, who talks about a very well-known amateur, Ray Norton, VK3ATN. And finally, I present an article about Australia's now defunct time and frequency service, Radio VNG. The articles by Clive and Bill were first broadcast in November 2012. Now it's over to Clive of VK6CSW.
The man behind the Butterworth filter. There are many different types of filter used in radio and electronics, but one of the better known ones is the Butterworth. In the electronic sense, a filter is a network that passes signals of certain frequencies and rejects or attenuates others. A radio receiver, for example, is essentially a filter system which ideally removes all frequencies other than the one desired by the listener, while a transmitter uses filters to transmit only the desired frequency or frequencies necessary to convey intelligence while suppressing all spurious radiation. The Butterworth filter, be it low pass, high pass, or band pass, is a type of signal processing filter designed to have as flat a frequency response as possible in the pass band. It can thus be described as a maximally flat magnitude filter. When Stephen Butterworth was designing his filters, transistors were, of course, unknown. His filters were built using passive inductors and capacitors, and of necessity, these were quite physically large components. These days, we often use active circuits called gyrators in their place. An important property of a gyrator is that it inverts the current voltage characteristic of an electrical component or network. In the case of linear elements, such as inductors, the impedance is also inverted. In other words, a gyrator can make a capacitive circuit behave inductively, a series LC circuit behave like a parallel LC circuit, and so on. This feature is extremely useful in integrated circuit technology, where it's difficult to realize miniature inductors, but tiny capacitive elements in the gyrator circuit can be used to simulate them. Thus, these days, the gyrator is primarily used in active filter design to simulate the physical passive design, achieving miniaturization impossible with conventional coils and capacitors. The start of modern filter theory is usually credited to Stephen Butterworth in his paper On the Theory of Filter Amplifiers, published in 1930. It is but one of many important papers by the man once described by Professor R.V. Jones, Assistant Director of the Intelligence Section of Britain's Air Ministry during World War II, and author of the authoritative Most Secret War, as a most impressive character. Butterworth himself modestly held that his one claim to fame was that as an examiner, he had once failed Captain P.P. Eckersley, the chief engineer of the BBC. Despite his modesty, a glance through the titles of scientific papers written by Butterworth tells a very different story. Stephen Butterworth was born in 1885 in Rochdale near Manchester, England, the son of a postman. Despite his modest position, Stephen's father must have appreciated the value of education, because in 1904 Stephen entered the University of Manchester, and just 3 years later graduated with a first-class Bachelor of Science degree in physics and a first-class teacher's certificate. 4 years later, in 1908, he gained a Master of Science degree in physics, and for the next 11 years was a lecturer in physics at the Manchester Municipal College of Technology. After this, he joined the National Physical Laboratory, Teddington, Surrey, in England, doing theoretical and experimental work on the determination of standards of electrical inductance. In 1921, he joined the British Admiralty's Research Laboratory, ARL, but the classified nature of his work there precluded the publication of some of his work. However, in 1924, he published a paper dealing with the distribution of the magnetic field and return current around a submarine cable carrying alternating current. And he also studied the effects of underwater explosions as well as the stability of torpedoes. Between 1911 and 1931, Butterworth published a major research paper almost every year, except for the war years of 1914 to 1918. As mentioned earlier, it was in 1930 that he published On the Theory of Filter Amplifiers, which laid the foundation for what we now know as the Butterworth filter. By 1939, the year that World War II started, Butterworth had risen to the position of Principal Scientific Officer. Throughout the war, he continues his work in the Admiralty Research Laboratory's Scientific Research and Experiment Department, retiring in 1945. During this period, he successfully investigated means of degaussing ships to protect them from triggering magnetic mines. For his work, he was awarded the Order of the British Empire in 1942. A quiet, unassuming man, Butterworth was a first-rate applied mathematician who often solved problems others regarded as insoluble. His knowledge and advice were widely sought and readily offered, qualities that made him revered and respected by his colleagues. Stephen Butterworth died on the 28th of October 1958 at his home in Cowes on the Isle of Wight in England.
Thanks very much, Clive. And now it's over to Bill, VK3BR, who will tell us a little bit about a very well-known amateur, the late Ray Norton, VK3ATN.
Ray Norton, VK3ATN. Ray Norton, VK3ATN, sadly became a silent key on the 15th of September 2012. Ray was an early member of the RAOTC with membership number 232. He was very well known to radio amateurs both in Australia and overseas, mainly because of his pioneering moon bounce activities and his antenna manufacturing business. The following information about Ray was prepared from the eulogy presented at Ray's funeral service by his younger son, David. Ray, the only child of Thomas and Sissy May Norton, was born on the 4th of February 1929 in Ascot Vale, Melbourne. Ray's father was a fireman who worked for the Melbourne Fire Brigade, and the family moved to several different fire stations around Melbourne. Ray went to school at Camberwell, where he was apparently a very bright student. When he was 12 years old, he built his first crystal radio set, encouraged by a neighbour who was an amateur radio operator. And during World War II, he was riding around on his bicycle repairing other people's radios. Later on, he studied to become a licensed radio amateur. His call sign, of course, was VK3ATN, and thus ATN antennas eventually became the name of his business. From Camberwell, Ray went on to study at Melbourne University High School and then on to Melbourne University to study engineering. After the war, he went to a branch of the university at Mildura that was opened up for returned soldiers who wanted to further their education. In 1952, as part of his engineering studies, he went to the Victorian country town of Birchip to do radio repairs for Clyde Case, who was also a radio amateur and had a business in Cumming Avenue, Birchip. Ray could see that he could probably make a living doing repair work and decided to give it a go. He rented a small shop in the main street of Birchip, and with the money he earned, he bought stock to put on the shelves, and his business, Birchip Sun Radio, grew. In 1956, Ray married Margaret from Narracourt, South Australia, and they subsequently had a family of four children, three boys, Trevor, Peter and David, and later a daughter, Jennifer. At the time of his passing, Ray had 12 grandchildren and five half-great-grandchildren who have blessed his life. In the early 1960s, Ray was challenged by some American radio amateurs to see if he could bounce radio signals off the moon to enable communication with people on the other side of the Earth. They didn't believe he could do it because of the low power limits allowed for amateurs in Australia, as enforced by the Australian radio authorities. Ray was determined to prove them wrong, and he was successful in doing that. He designed an antenna that could increase the strength of his signal despite the limited power. This antenna pointed in a fixed direction, up. So for his system to work, he had to wait until his antenna on Earth was pointing at the moon, and the moon had to be positioned above the antenna in the correct window for the signal to bounce back to the Earth. He made all the calculations to determine when this would happen, and he would get computer readouts from NASA to confirm his calculations. These came on very long printouts, and David remembered they were put to great use by Ray's children when he had finished with the data. Ray was absolutely over the moon when he heard his signal bounce back. He called out to wife Margaret to see if she could hear the signal, and when she said yes, he was ecstatic. He had become the first person in the Southern Hemisphere to successfully bounce radio signals off the moon. And of course, the moon is so far away it takes 2 seconds for the signal to reach the moon and another 2 seconds to bounce back. He went on to set 3 world records for long-distance communication using amateur frequencies and powers. As a result of this groundbreaking achievement, he was given a free trip to America to explain to the radio amateurs over there how he did it, and he was awarded a plaque from the American Radio Relay League, the ARRL, in recognition. During the Apollo moon missions, Ray designed and built a 28-foot dish and set up radio equipment capable of talking with the astronauts in the shack he had built under the tower the dish was mounted on. Son David can remember as an 8-year-old squeezing into his father's shack with about 8 adults to listen in to the NASA missions. Apparently, Ray said that he wasn't game to try to talk to them in case he interfered with the data link that the spacecraft had with NASA. Ray loved Aussie rules football and was a passionate follower of the Carlton Football Club. He played for the Carlton Colts Football Club under-21s when they won the 1949 Premiership. He also played for the Birchip Football Club. He was a member of the Warwick Nabil Aero Club and held a private pilot's license until he suffered an Achilles tendon injury during a football match. He was also interviewed for the TV program called Australia's Most Weird and Wonderful People because of his amateur radio achievements. The Nortons had a family joke about whether he was the weird or the wonderful. In 1974, Ray played a part in the Darwin's recovery from Cyclone Tracy by relaying radio messages. In 1981, Ray had a very bad accident when a tower he was climbing on was blown down in a mini tornado. He was unable to work for 10 months. At that time, second son Peter, who had started working for Ray, and Ray's wife Margaret ran the business. Peter was Ray's apprentice and became a qualified TV technician and radio tradesman. He also manufactured the aerials and aluminium towers that Ray designed. In 1986, a fire broke out in the factory. It was badly damaged and needed to be rebuilt. Peter had the job of fixing the mess it was left in. It is believed the fire was started by a mouse chewing through an electrical cable. Ray loved to study the stars and was involved with radio astronomy. He altered the skyline around Birchip with his dishes and towers. Those who have been to Birchip in recent times can vouch for that. Ray contacted people all around the world and made many friends, and as a result, the family entertained many visitors from other countries. In 2011, Ray suffered a series of mini-strokes and did not fully recover after that. Vale, Ray, VK3ATN. A long-time member of the RAOTC and a valued member of the amateur radio fraternity. He will be sorely missed.
You're listening to VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia.
This is VNG, Lyndhurst, Victoria, Australia, on Farpoint 5, 7.5 or 12 megahertz. VNG is a standard frequency and time signal service of the Australian Telecommunications Commission. This is VNG, Lyndhurst, Victoria, Australia, on 4.5, 7.5 or 12 megahertz.
Many of our listeners will remember hearing this announcement of Radio VNG in years past. That recording was courtesy of YouTube. Radio VNG was Australia's time signal service. It was inaugurated by the Australian Post Office, or more formally referred to as the PMG, Postmaster General's Department, at Lyndhurst, Victoria, on the 21st of September 1964, although a predecessor service using the call sign VLX had begun in March 1946 alongside the shortwave radio station VLR, which was part of the ABC domestic shortwave service.
From 1964 until 1987, Radio VNG transmitted on 4.5, 7.5 and 12 MHz from the Lyndhurst transmitters. After 1987, it relocated to Shanes Park, New South Wales, and transmitted on 5 different frequencies: 2.5, 5, 8.638, 12.984, and 16 MHz. Shanes Park, also referred to as Lyndillo, is a suburb of Sydney and is located 50 kilometres west of the Sydney Central Business District. In 1960, the eastern portion of Shanes Park was purchased by the Commonwealth Government to house an air navigation facility. Substantial heritage from this facility remains to this day. The replacement VNG service operated until the 30th of June 2002 on 2.5 and 8.838 MHz. The remaining three transmitters, 5, 12.984 and 16 MHz, were finally closed down on the 31st of December 2002. Radio VNG broadcast time in binary coded decimal or BCD format during seconds 21 to 58. It also broadcast DET 1 information during seconds 1 through to 16. DET 1, sometimes also written DUT, DUT, is a time correction equal to the difference between universal time, which is defined by the Earth's rotation, and coordinated universal time, which is defined by a network of precision atomic clocks. Tones were usually 1 kHz. Encoding details were described in the VNG leaflet published at the time by the National Standards Commission. Radio VNG also broadcast a spoken time signal every 15 minutes. The original service, Lyndhurst, was shut down in October 1987 due to a lack of funding. The area has since been converted to housing estates and was located between Dandenong and Cranbourne in the southeast of Melbourne. Transmitters. The service employed STC double sideband full carrier AM HF broadcast transmitters. I recall a visit to Lyndhurst in 1982, and the transmitter hall had a complement of 10 kilowatt STC HF broadcast transmitters, which were used for various purposes, VNG, VLR, as well as Radio Australia. The 2.5 MHz service used an STC 4SU55A transmitter, whilst the 5 MHz 8.638, 12.984 and 16 MHz services employed STC 48U48B transmitters. Poking around the internet, there is one report that the 2.5 MHz transmitter was a Harris transmitter, formerly used by TKA at Katoomba on 783 kHz. This became surplus after TKA converted to the FM broadcasting band. Some of our listeners may be able to shed some further light on this subject. For many years, people and organisations throughout Australia had made use of the timing signals broadcast by Radio VNG. These timing signals may be used for purposes such as surveying, geophysics, and navigation. Radio VNG users include seismologists, astronomers, upper atmospheric physicists, surveyors, geophysicists studying the Earth's magnetic field, and amateur radio operators. This service formed part of Australia's technological infrastructure by providing a signal of modest accuracy, 1 millisecond, that can be readily accessed with relatively inexpensive equipment. It is also used to confirm any ambiguities inherent in more precise methods of time comparison. Here's a partial extract from the leaflet. Radio VNG is Australia's standard frequency and time signal service. For approximately 23 years, Radio VNG was broadcast from Lyndhurst, Victoria. It was funded by Telstra, formerly Telecom Australia, and the monitoring and research were conducted by their research laboratories at Clayton in Victoria. In late 1986, the Precise Time Working Group, now the National Time Committee, under the auspices of the Commission, learned of the impending closure of Radio VNG and conducted a survey to ascertain the usage of the service and the scientific and economic impact of its closure. The survey results showed that there was an extensive and diverse usage of the service throughout the community, usage which by the very nature of its applications was difficult to quantify economically. Following the closure of Radio VNG in October 1987, the Commission convened a seminar to investigate what provisions needed to be made for an intermediate accuracy time service and to consider the extent to which the provisions for high accuracy time comparisons were meeting Australia's needs. Several alternatives to Radio VNG were discussed, but each was found to have significant disadvantages in terms of accessibility and cost compared with Radio VNG's time service. It was recommended by the many participants at the meeting that Radio VNG be reinstated, that the service be recognised as part of Australia's technological infrastructure and be funded by the federal government. At this time, no signal department or authority was identified to fund the operation of Radio VNG. The Radio VNG Users Consortium was formed to re-establish Radio VNG and to collect donations from former users to dismantle, pack and transfer the transmitting equipment to a new location. More than $10,000 was raised and the equipment was relocated to Air Services Australia's, formerly the Civil Aviation Authority's, International Transmitting Station at Landillo, New South Wales. The Australian Surveying and Land Infrastructure Group, AusLIG, now known as the National Mapping Division, Geoscience Australia, agreed to finance the operation of Radio VNG on a partial cost recovery basis from users. Initially, there were both technical and licensing problems, all of which were eventually resolved. And that ends a short history of Australia's time and frequency standard service, Radio VNG. Acknowledgement for this article goes to Wikipedia and also the VNG leaflet published at the time by the National Standards Commission. Although Radio VNG is now silent, it provided a very good service in its day. Time has marched on and low-cost GPS-disciplined oscillators with much higher precision are now available for as little as more than $100. Using internet time services, accuracy far better than what VNG provided at the time is now readily available at very low cost.
This is VNG Lyndhurst, Victoria, Australia on 4.5, 7.5 or 12 megahertz, a standard frequency and time signal service of the Australian Telecommunications Commission. Your attention, please. This standard frequency and time signal service, VNG, will cease all transmissions on 30th September 1987.
In keeping with tradition, we conclude this broadcast with a short story. Financial planning. Dan was a single man living at home with his father and working in the family business. When he found out he was going to inherit a fortune when his sickly father died, he decided he needed to find a wife with whom to share his fortune. One evening, at an investment meeting, he spotted the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Her natural beauty took his breath away. "I may look like just an ordinary guy," he said to her, "but in just a few years my father will die and I will inherit $200 million. Impressed, the woman asked for his business card, and 3 days later she became his stepmother, which just goes to show that women are so much better at financial planning than men. And that story was sent in by Winston Nichols, VK7EM.
That's about all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. We look forward to being with you on the first Monday of next month, except January. 73 from VK3 ATN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.